Radio City Talk.
The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Former Red striker John Durnin. Morning, Durns.
Good morning, Steve.
We're just on the point of the one-year anniversary for Jurgen Klopp since his arrival at Anfield. It's been, I'd say it's been a breathless first year, hasn't it, in terms of the speed, the breakneck approach to it all from Jurgen?
Yeah, it's just simply flew over. I mean, the guy's been unbelievable. I think not just for Liverpool. I think the fact that when he went on Sky last week on the Monday night, I think the response was unbelievable. I think a lot of people were, you know, praising him, and you know, to have the guts to go on and say it as it is. Now he sees football. It was so refreshing. I think the guy's he's gone up in the popularity stake whatsoever. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he was amazing on the telly. Would you have expected such an impact within the space of 12 months? Because culturally, within the football club, he has literally shifted things to a different level.
He has. I mean, the expectation now, I mean, everyone's just thinking so high because of the fact that the impact he's had. I think it's similar, as you always hit out, he loves the place. He reminded me so much of when he was back in Dortmund. So I think the similarities there must obviously have some effect on him because, I mean, he just adores the place and you can tell he's so happy here and he's so comfortable. And I think when you're happy and you're comfortable in your work life, I think everything else comes easy.
Because the one thing you've got to do is you've got to make that connection with the fans. You've got to have that ability to relate to the fans at a club like Liverpool or at a club like Everton. And of course, many Premier League clubs don't really have that association between manager and fans. That's a really strong knit bond. But he straight away grasped that. And I think it's because he makes them feel involved in everything that he's doing as well.
Yeah, I think he does. I think he invites them into his world. I think the fact that, you know, he interacts with the fans and it's just such a good rapport with them. And like you said, I think it's a great advantage to have that with the fans who are on your side 100%. And they're totally with it. And he gets it. I think he just gets to what Liverpool's all about. He gets the history and what this club's all about. And I think he just wants to be a part of that and make it better as well.
Did you work under any managers, Derns, who had any sort of similar characteristics or relationship with supporters?
I think Alan Ball at Portsmouth. I've always said he probably extended. I mean, I was lucky enough to play till I was 39, but I think it was down to Bawley. I think he gave me an extra 4 years. I think I might have retired around 35, 36. But the fact that Bawley came in, like I said, he came in, he had such an impact when we were 7 points adrift from the bottom of the table. And he came in and he gave an hour and a half speech that was just absolutely, you think you could fight the world. And he just took us on some roller coaster to keep us up that year. And he just had that knack of talking to players and telling them what he wanted. But the fans as well, he just said it as it was. And he was so passionate, Bawley. And he's the only guy I think I've worked with who came over like that and had that rapport with the fans.
What was that hour and a half speech you referred to there?
It was basically where did we, you know, save our country from? Where did we go from to go over to Germany to, you know, D-Day? It started here in Portsmouth, all things like that. It was such inspiring stuff. I mean, it was, you couldn't hear a pin drop. And he talked about the passion and, you know, what people do around this city and the jobs you've got it easy. You know, you hit on people working, going to work at 4 a.m. and coming here to watch you. He was unbelievable. And it was just like, you just went out and you could just sense straight away he had a different feel around the club.
He just understood the working class football culture. I mean, he must have spent days preparing that.
Well,
it wasn't off the cuff, was it?
Well, no, I, you know, but everyone who went to see him after his after-dinner speaking would say it was fantastic because he'd talk about his upbringing, the way his father was with him, where he was brought up. And it was all about the working class. And he got it. He knew it. He knew how privileged we were as footballers. And that's what he hit home. He said, you were so lucky. And he drummed into it. It was like, you were so lucky to play for football for a living. And that's what he did. And that's what he did best. He just inspired him. It made you think, hang on, this guy's right, this is easy what we're doing. So you went on the pitch and all you were doing, you were going to play football. And he seemed to get that extra 10-15% out of players.
So you were doing it for your manager. And are the Liverpool players in any way sort of replicating that? Have many of them raised their game because of their manager?
I think they have. I think you look at, basically, you know, some of the players who were performing when he wasn't there and to what they are now. I think he has. I think he's inspired them. You can just see the way the players are. It's It's no gimmick. It's no, charade as such. Everything's 100%, and you can tell there's a bond in there. And by all accounts, I was talking to the kit man, he said, he said, it's unbelievable. He said, the way the lads get on now, he said, he's going in, he said, it's a pleasure. It's like Disneyland when they're going into the training because everyone's so happy.
Because football can be a weird culture, can't it? From the outside, we sort of think it's always sweetness and light, but actually going into training can be a little bit of a tough time at some football clubs.
Oh, yeah, I've had both. Like I said, when Bowley came in, we were at Rock Bottom. I mean, the 2 months before that, it was like horrible. And this is unbelievable to say, but you didn't want to go into work for the simple fact the stale and the atmosphere around the club, it was horrible. And then if you're in that environment, like you're saying, you're trying to train, you're right at the bottom of the league, you're trying to get results, and the manager's shouting, he's effing and blind, he's doing everything, and he's trying to get the best out of the players, and he's completely lost the room, as where no one's going to give 100% on training ground. No one wants to make a mistake, so you're not playing in your comfort zone, so you're not getting the best out of your players. And I've been there when, I've been around that environment where it's horrible. And then when Bawley came in, and he took us on this roller coaster. Like I said, it was just easy to come in. It was a pleasure to come in and train. It just came so much quicker, better. The football was better. And the whole club was, the environment was a lot better.
Everything followed after him. Right, Man City are top of the Premier League, but there's no doubt that it's Liverpool and Spurs that are catching the eye so far this season. With that sort of breakneck attitude, that fury, that intensity that they've got at the moment, they're the ones to really enjoy watching.
Yeah, I mean, it's football. It's football, the highest quality, and I think it's nice to watch. It's nice to know that they're not exactly, there's going to be 3, 4, 5 teams involved in this year, unless they go on a spurt and they pull away. But I mean, I think the 3, 4 clubs are at the top at the moment, and possibly a fifth. I think it'll be so close. I think everyone will be beating each other.
Spurs, they've sort of gone under the radar, haven't they? But actually, if you have a closer look at them, the potential there is huge.
Well, I think obviously everyone, if it wasn't for Leicester, everyone was expecting Leicester to just fall away, lose points near the end of the season, and Tottenham would probably go on and capitalise. And I think it was the fact that them at the end, I think that Chelsea was always a big kick to them in the teeth. They just lost the world and they just lost it right at the end. But up until them last four games towards the end of the season, I think the form side was Tottenham. And you can see what they're capable of. And, what they've done, they've signed all their good young players on long-term contracts. So, and he's improved, I think, and he will improve them again. And they're going to be a dangerous side to beat this year.
Now, on the Legends last night, we were talking about penalty takers, Derns. Of course, Aldo wasn't bad in his day. 17 scored, 1 missed. We know the one he missed. Because, of course, James Milner has become sort of the king of the penalty spot for Liverpool. Scored 4 in the last 5 games, and every one of those penalties he's taken just looks sort of easy. It looks perfection, doesn't it? But taking penalties is not easy. Michael Owen's record was 13 scored and 10 missed. He missed 10 penalties, can you believe it? While you were at Liverpool, was there any sort of practice put into penalties?
Not that I know of. I don't remember anyone taking practice penalties. I did see Aldo a couple of times when Aldo first came. When he wasn't with the first team squad, he was with the reserves. He'd come and he'd train, and he'd do a few. I'd seen him do a few, but not like it wasn't like week in week out things. Mm. I think the fact is, the only time he took penalties was when you knew it was a cup competition and it was going to go to penalties. But that's the only time. Honestly, thinking back, I can't even remember it. It's ridiculous that no one did practice penalties.
They must practice now, though. I mean, James Milner doesn't just execute that off the top of his head.
Well, do you know what? I would imagine you would, because you're a penalty taker, but I think, given everyone would like to take a penalty, I think, I'd take it if no one wanted. But, like you said, it's an art. You should score, but the keepers are that good these days as well. I mean, first and foremost, you should hit the target, and then if you hit the target, you've got a good chance of going in. But the keepers nowadays, there's some good keepers who, and there's a lot more penalties saved than he was back in the day.
Now, your great mate, Jan Molby, was the expert at this. And he does like to...
You do have to bring him up.
He likes to wax lyrical, doesn't he, about how good he was at penalties.
He says he never missed one, but do you know what?
He did.
This rates him, and I always remind him, we were in Iceland and we had a tournament. and we were favourites to win. It was like a seven-a-side tournament indoor because it was very cold at the time. And we had a really, we played really good sides. Anyway, we got to the final and we went to penalties. And who cost us? Who missed the penalty?
Mulvey. Mr. Mulvey, would you believe it?
He said he never missed it. He said the keeper saved it. So
with all that power from those thighs behind him, and he's missed it.
Beware like smaller goals, but I mean, he stuck mine in, so I always rib him on that one.
Derns, thank you very much indeed. Have a brilliant Tuesday.
Cheers, Steve.
John Dernan there, former Liverpool striker.
This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.